Welcome, everyone. We have a guest joining us a little later. I'm very excited to be hosting him, and I will introduce him, and he's there. Just get his ears to ring in his presence. Meanwhile, I would like to start the way I always like to start these classes, is to hear from a few people. What has transpired from you related to what we did last week between then and now? Do you have any successes, any places where you noticed that you did something differently? Questions, comments, just to round up our discussion from last week. Does anybody have anything?
I have received much richness from reviewing the material and slowing myself down to take the time specifically with my grandchildren, have been really aware with them. And that has really been enriching. I feel like as though I'm releasing the control behaviors that I just want to release and just have a much richer connection with them. I'm very
lovely. Lovely. I'm happy to hear about that in particular because I know we took some time with it last week. So that's wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Just in terms of looking at commitment number one, in terms of really being with myself, what I've started to notice is that I'm finding a voice more in this past week with my mother, with people who I'm talking on the phone with. I'm taking a chance more than usual to say, hey, there's something up for me, and do you have space to hear me? And it felt risky, but yet it's because I've been listening to myself much more and not pushing down the things that might be there. And it's been a natural consequence, I think.
Cool. I'm really, really happy to hear the threads weaving. Gives me satisfaction, in part because so many times I think the task in front of us is so monumental. And when I think about the totality of it, I can get overwhelmed and discouraged. When I'm able to get concrete evidence that things are changing, even in small ways for people, in the direction that gives me hope, then it gives me hope. Thank you. It helps to break down the whole magnitude into tiny next step, tiny next step, tiny next step. Okay, so today we are continuing to dip in the overall question of what does it mean to commit to nonviolence? This question will accompany us throughout this course. That is what it is about. And in part, this is why we have Michael Nagler with us today, because his approach is a complementary aspect of nonviolence, and I'm really curious to see how the two will weave together and how the two communities will interact. He is representing a different community of practice. And the other part of today is to really start delving into the commitments. And I was really looking forward to hearing from the two people who volunteered to present one commitment each today. So I'm guessing we'll do one now and one after we're done with Michael, but I don't know exactly how it will unfold. So let's hear, which one did you pick?
Vulnerability and authenticity.
Risking my significance.
It's really sweet you picked two of my favorite commitments.
So risking my significance, even when I'm full of doubt, I want to offer myself in full to the world. If I find myself thinking that I'm not important or that my actions are of no significance, I want to seek support to come back to my knowledge that my presence and my gifts matter. And what attracts me to is the guidance to stretch from my comfort zone and to experiment with what it entails to live fearlessly and purposefully. It really invites me to take risks and be courageous, build trust that I'll be okay, even if people do not like what I have to offer, and that I will guide my choices and actions instead of the preconceived possibilities of assured or a societal norm I live by.
Yeah.
And perpetuate at the expense of my wisdom or my innate hunger to grow and feel free to experiment in creating a world of possibilities. A world of possibilities, growth, innovation, bold visions that live in me.
Thank you. You know what is striking me in this moment as you are saying this is that it would be impossible for systems of domination, oppression, exploitation, any of those things to continue if large masses of people took seriously this commitment in particular. It's like continuing to be ruled by the very few is only possible because the rest of us don't think that we matter. It's a necessary condition for the current system to continue. It's not like this is all it would take to change it. But without this, the system cannot continue exactly as it is, because we are all giving it our power by living small. And it doesn't matter for that piece. It doesn't matter if we are, you know, recognized teacher or if we are a housemaid. Whatever, wherever we find ourselves, there is that possible move to say, wait a minute, there is life in me. There is wisdom in me. There are the things that matter to me. There are the things that I want. There are the things that I know. And where do I get off believing that I can withhold it from life and that things will be okay if I do that? I'm touched by your choice of this one in particular, and I'm in some ways not surprised, because this has been your path for the last while since we've been in ongoing interaction. That's what I'm seeing you do. Is continuing to walk in that direction.
Thanks to you, I said.
Well, it's a very complex thing. I want you to thank yourself. You know, I say the same things to everyone. I mean, I don't mean that exactly in the most literal sense. I do offer individualized paths and directions to different people. But it's all of the same ilk. And some people take me up on it, and some people don't. And you did. So it's not thanks to me. It's thanks to your willingness to take the risk and follow this path, even when it's uncomfortable. I'm just a catalyst. I'm not doing false modesty. I'm just pushing you to take ownership more. So I would like to put people in small groups just for a few minutes to chat with each other about this particular commitment. Where is it that you hold back from risking your significance in full? And be either general or concrete, whatever works for you. And what would it take? What do you need to decide, or what support do you need to line up in order to move in this direction more? Let's pair people up. Welcome back. I would love to hear from one or two people. Anything that came up, or any questions, or what this journey has been like for you to explore this more deeply?
I decided to share this just because it seems so basic and so simple, which is if the purpose, the basic purpose of nonviolent communication is connection. If our greatest desire is to connect, then that leads to a whole string of different thoughts, one of which is this a deeper wanting to share my significance as different from wanting an audience when we speak or, you know, wanting to get a point across. So I'll just say that much because I think it does so much streams from that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. There is something pretty significant that came up for me in hearing you. One is that it's really interesting for me that I keep talking about nonviolence, and several people on the call keep bringing it back to NVC per se, which to me is only one wing of nonviolence. It rests on a consciousness and principles that are deeper than anything that has to do with communication. And it's those deeper things that I am interested in exploring in this course more than anything. That's one thing. The other is that I am not, I definitely know that nonviolence, not nonviolent communication, nonviolence doesn't have a primary purpose of connection. And then beyond that, if I go into NVC per se, I have a concern about the idea that connection is the primary good rather than the pathway that allows dialogue and solutions to emerge that work for everyone. But it's a paradox. If I just focus on the solutions, then I don't get to the level of connection that is necessary to make it happen. If I just focus on the connection, I can forget that there's a life to be lived and food to grow and things that need attending to. And I want to be able to attend to all of life from this consciousness, not just to human connection and relationship. So I'm curious if you want to say anything in response. What I wanted to know is how you are affected by what you heard from me, how it resonates or doesn't in you.
Well, part of it is I'm pretty new to all this, so I'm feeling that it really expanded, you know, and maybe helped more me understand where you're coming from. So I'm feeling just like maybe opening another pathway for me and another like really broader way to look at things, and whew, it's like a lot. I mean, I'm excited to hear what you're having to say, so by my even misunderstanding maybe that could help me understand more, and maybe there's others that would help.
Thank you.
Hello, Mickey. In response to the question about risking my significance, apart from the many occasions where I probably don't speak truthfully when my needs are not met, I mean, it happens often, so every time that happens, I am not risking my significance. However, the one example or the one incident that is big in my mind is in the writing sphere. I think I do have some stories that I could share with others through writing, and yet I find it extremely difficult to trust that these stories are worth sharing. And I think it has to do with a lack of confidence with writing, and it's more a kind of lack of confidence as to whether I would manage to put my thoughts together on paper.
This lack of confidence is precisely the heart of the matter from where I stand. And for me, the commitment to nonviolence means doing it when you are not confident. Not waiting until the day comes when you are confident. I don't know if you know the story of Moses and the burning bush. Are you familiar with that story?
Yes, that he hesitated to approach the bush.
It's not just to hesitate to approach the bush. When God called Moses and said, here, you have a calling, you go do this, Moses said, wait a minute, I'm not the right man for the task. I stutter. I this, I that. And God basically said, too bad, you go and do it because you are the one. Not because you are perfect, not because, you know, you are ready, but because the task needs doing. So because for me, everything is about practice and not about just some ideas. If I wait until I'm ready, I might die and not do it. When we did the first retreat in 2001, January 2001, 6-day retreat, had never been done in the U.S., as far as I know. And we just took it upon ourselves to do it. We had never done it. We didn't know how to do it. No one taught us how to do it. We didn't even know if we could pull it off. We didn't know if we could have people in there. And we decided that if we had 12 people by 2 months before the date that it starts, then we would go ahead. I now know you almost never have that with a retreat because people just don't sign up early, usually. So we had only 8 people. Yeah. And my 2 colleagues, which were my beloved sister and another colleague who is no longer on this planet, they were hemming and hawing. And I just kind of like put my foot down and said, we've got to risk this because the momentum is going. Let's do it. And we ended up having 39 people. So it's essential that we focus on the word risk. Because if you have guarantees, then you're not actually risking. So I'd like to know, what would it take for you to actually sit down and write those stories?
I hope what you've just said will be the encouragement.
Yeah.
The other thing is about risk is asking for feedback. And that's part of the practice.
Yes.
And that's part of risking to be told that what I've just written is rubbish.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mickey, I recognize there are many places I think where I step up in the not knowing, and that's been part of my life for a long time in smaller or bigger degrees. I think what I connected with was the places where I don't even know that I'm not risking my significance because I have a kind of, it's a hidden quality. There are places I have a sense that I'm sitting back, but I don't know the ingredients of what it would look like to step forward. And I guess I'm up against some kind of level of fear or something that's an unknown quality. And just holding, that's a reality inside my experience. There are risks that I've taken over the years and ongoingly do, and there are places where I don't even know the arena of which that is, although I have a sense of it somewhere.
The thing that I think is important, every commitment invites us to seek support. And I wove that into every single commitment rather than making it a separate thing because, first of all, it happened intuitively. The whole experience of writing the commitments was completely intuitive. It was just an insistence inside of me that they had to be written. And then as I was writing them, I saw that they all were getting this same shape. So from then on, it became ritualized inside of me, and they got pulled out of me in that way. So when I was reflecting on why is this structure, why does it feel right? It's because emerging from the collective illusion that we live in is not something we can do individually. Gandhi didn't do it alone either. He had 70 people in his ashram who were there to support the project. That's not small. He had people that he relied on, that he talked with daily. There's a way in which the history that we are given, as if Gandhi was this one small man doing all of this, reinforces a mythology that is inaccurate, that is itself embedded in what I'm hoping we can transform.
I love that you say this, Nikki, because I had a really familiar experience. I talked a little bit about at the beginning about a new conversation, some place in which I held a different space with my mom, which was really about self-connection with me. And actually out of that arose this huge energy, and the energy itself is incredibly familiar. It's a big energy that rises, that wants to act in the world. And I came back full of this energy, and there were a few things, there were threads that I started to follow. And as I started to follow them, I hit this kind of, oh, maybe it won't happen, or maybe it can't happen. And at that moment, and I'm kind of intrigued in this, having looked at the commitments again recently, but what I realized is I've rarely, at those moments, ever conceived that I could lean into other people, that it's not my energy alone to try and hold.
Yes.
And I've never experienced that before, and it was like, oh, hold on, I'm not ever supposed to be doing this alone. It's not just about me. It's giving birth maybe to something in it, but it's not mine to hold on my own. It's too much. It's a completely new experience, and I'm really excited by it.
Yeah, I'm glad for that. So I would like to shift focus. So I would like to first introduce Michael. I told everybody that I was going to make your ears ring and your face red. It is such a profound honor for me that you agreed to be on this call, because I can't speak for the whole world, but in my mind, you are one of the key people in the entire world that are holding steady the pure notion of nonviolence as we inherited it from Gandhi, and persist in holding it when there's so many attempts to dilute or divert it.
Yes.
And you do this, in my experience of you, with humility that just inspires awe in me. Thank you.
Nikki, the better you get to know me, the more you realize that humility is well called for.
We can argue about that at another time. Right now, I would like to engage for a couple of minutes in conversation with you and then invite other people to join. Where I want to start is, there was someone last week, she asked a question that I said fit more today. Goes right to the heart of the issues of nonviolence, which is some version of, and I don't remember the words, why do we want to do nonviolence? What if it doesn't work?
Well, I'll answer those two questions separately. Why we have to do nonviolence? We have to do nonviolence because it's our nature. Gandhi said nonviolence is the law of the humans, of human beings. And by law, he was thinking in the back of his mind this question, this term of dharma. And dharma means more than law. It means inner nature, guiding principle. It can even mean religion. And so to actualize ourselves as fully human beings, as long as we have to, well, I was going to say as long as we have to act, but even in terms of our thoughts and our feelings, we have to be nonviolent because that is who we are.
Yeah, you're reminding me that I can't remember if it was Gandhi or Martin Luther King. It may have been Martin Luther King who said that the first person that benefits from nonviolence is the person who does it.
That could have been either of them. And it could have been anyone who's practiced nonviolence, particularly in a dangerous situation. Now, for the next part of the question, what if it doesn't work? I think if you discriminate between doing good work, having a good effect on the system, and getting what you want, I think you can make the statement that nonviolence always works. It doesn't necessarily get what you want, but it always makes things better. There have been so many cases, and I have a lot of these in my book, where people have practiced nonviolence, it looked like it was a complete failure, that it went on to accomplish even more than they had hoped. A classic example would be the salt campaign, the salt satyagraha of 1930. They wanted to get the salt tax revoked. It wasn't revoked. Thousands of people were in prison. A handful of them had died. And you could say from that point of view that it didn't, quote, work, unquote. But everybody knew that when they stood up to the British the way that they did, that freedom was only a matter of time. And it did take some time, 15 years later, but that country was free, and most people think that it was that one campaign, and particularly the raid on the Dharasena salt pans, which also failed. The protesters did not get into the salt pans. So everything was a complete failure on the surface, and yet it won India's freedom.
And why do you think that happens? Why do you think that it works that way?
I think, again, because it manifests human nature, and there's something inside of us that wants to actualize, that wants to realize who we are, that wants to fulfill our potential as a human being. You know how badly conditioned people can get, Nikki, and they don't see that humanity anymore. But what a nonviolent actor does, she or he holds up a kind of mirror. So a violent person is coming to you and saying, I'm threatening you and you're going to be scared. And you say, you can threaten me all you want to, I'm not scared. And it awakens something in that person.
The next question I want to ask you is, by and large, the people who are on the call are not activists in any traditional sense of the word. And their interest in nonviolence is much more, if I can speak for them and intuit accurately, it may not be all of them, is what it means in daily living. What's your sense of how do you apply these principles? You, the people that you come in contact with, do you have any pieces of wisdom, guidelines?
Well, we should be able to come up with some because, as Gandhi said, it's not really nonviolence unless it's your daily life. So I guess I would want to start with a general principle, and that is that when you act out of the awareness of unity, you are putting yourself into a nonviolent state of mind, and your thoughts and your actions will be nonviolent. Now, let me give you a beautiful example because I just heard it a little while ago. We are here in Seattle at a Mennonite church, and they run a very big operation for people who are experiencing homelessness. They don't call them homeless people because they don't want to characterize them. And so one of these people had a seriously troubled man, went kind of berserk, and actually carried out a knife attack and stabbed four people, one of them dangerously, almost punctured a lung. So these friends of mine, they created a kind of restorative circle where the victims and the attacker were sitting in a circle, and this victim who had been hurt very badly, he'd been stabbed in the back. He said, look, I don't want to be vindictive or anything, but I'm hurting, you know, I have this wound to my back, I can't even reach it, I can't change my own bandages. And then he looked right across the circle at the person who had stabbed him and said, could you change my bandage for me?
Wow.
And the guy said, yeah, I'd be glad to. And the victim said, could you do it right now? He said, sure. And this fellow took his shirt off and went over to him. And that act of complete trust where you did not identify the person with his action, that your action was horrific, but you are not horrific. You are a human being and you are redeemable. And I'm going to, any kind of control or power I'm going to exert over you is the attractive power of vulnerability. That was a nonviolent interaction. Now, of course, getting stabbed in the back is not something that happens to us every day, literally, but it does happen to us quite often metaphorically. And so the guideline holds. It just says, you know, he did not internalize the disunity between the two of them. He held on to the unity, and that's what Gandhi calls satyagraha, or clinging to truth, is clinging to that unity.
Thank you. Oh, what a story. Thank you so much. That is so inspiring. I would like now to open up the conversation for a few minutes and see if there are people who want to make comments or ask you questions.
My question is specifically regarding mass media. I have a lot of difficulty figuring out how to function in my world, this world, when there's so much violence in movies and books and television, and I just don't know how to be in this world and not be affected or connected with all of that. And I noticed also in the pledge it speaks to minimizing exposure. Could you speak to that a bit?
Sure. That pledge is part of a project which is called Roadmap, and it's a comprehensive strategy for a long-term revolutionary deep change. And not to get into that whole thing, there are two documents that go along with that packet, that kit, so to speak. And one of them is the Pledge of Nonviolence, which you're referring to, and the other is a sketch of human nature, kind of back-to-back thing there. And what we recommend to people, well, first of all, the inner circle of our scheme is about personal empowerment. And what we recommend to people is a list of five practices that they can undertake to empower themselves personally and make themselves more effective and enable them to carry out nonviolence more safely and more effectively. And two kind of matching projects or suggestions within those five are, on the one hand, minimize is like the conservative way to put it. We often say boycott them. Just don't expose yourself to the mass media, period, end of quote. As far as in you lies, just don't do it. Now, that's not going to be a complete abstention anyway, because according to recent studies, we're exposed to over 3,000 commercial messages every day. I'm just going down the road here in Seattle, and I'm looking at one advertisement after another. I won't read them to you. But as far as voluntarily, we don't expose ourselves to any of the mass media. We look for alternative media, like this program, for example, to get our news and our entertainment from. Now, when you do that, and I think this may be the basis of your question, it's going to create a vacuum, because this is our culture, and it's like we're getting this intravenous injection of all of this violence and this low human image happening almost 24/7, and suddenly we cut it off. So there's going to be a sense of opening, a vacuum, and what we say is rush into that opening with a thorough study of nonviolence. And nonviolence is not just, I will not hit you. It's a complete science that Gandhi spent almost 50 years developing. And we can learn about it cognitively, you know, read books, watch videos, go to the NVC websites, go to our website, metacenter.org. The resources are proliferating. Stephanie Van Hook, the director of MetaCenter, has a radio program, biweekly, every other week program here locally in California. And so I've been doing a little poking around to see what news services there are for nonviolence events. List of films. We just got a website from a fellow in Germany listing almost 100 films that have some degree of nonviolent content. So when you start looking around for it, now you have to be more proactive. You know, you don't just punch a button on the TV and start washing the dishes. But once you poke around a little bit, you can develop a steady stream of information and inspiration about nonviolence. And that replaces, in a very beneficial way, the negative image that you've been getting from the mass media. And then you will have a beneficial influence on other people just by, you know, the way you're being and what you're able to communicate to them in conversation. So that's what I would say.
Thank you. We have two more questions, and I still have some other part of my original plan.
Michael, I'm looking at your roadmap. I'm wondering if there's a circle or a circle that is missing, and that for me would be the organizational or collective power, which would be a concentric circle going all the way around between your person power and the other segments of your roadmap, because I think that there's a real need to create nonviolent organizations that enable us to work on all these different areas.
A couple of things. First, the content of those little wedges around the circle, those are nonviolence organizations. And secondly, what we're hoping will happen with Roadmap is a strategic council will emerge, and these strategists, whoever they are, will chart a course for a long-term social revolution. Then existing organizations will, you know, fall into line around that strategy to the extent that they wish to. And one thing that a person will be able to do is go to a sector of that circle that they're interested in. This is going to be an internet tool we're hoping to get built soon. And they'll be able to find their way to other people and organizations and network with them. So thanks for that suggestion. I think we've got it covered, but I think you're completely correct. We need these organizations.
Thank you.
I'm deeply aware inside myself what it's like for people to struggle to even remotely conceptualize what you're talking about. It resonates deeply inside me when you talk about it. There's our human nature. And for many people, I suspect that it's really outside the bounds of their experience to name it in that way. I'm guessing you're just making inroads in the way that you can.
You're right. What we are trying to do is work with first adopters and create more of a visibility. And I have the confidence that people will be drawn into that visibility because this speaks to a natural need for all of us. And beyond that, I cannot predict. My life commitment is to do the best I can and leave the results up to God.
It is fitting within what we were talking about before. We were talking about one of the 17 core commitments is about risking my significance. And that is exactly the essence of it, is you do what you do because you're called to do it, because it's essential and necessary, and not because you know that there will be the results that you want.
Exactly. That takes some courage.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome, Nikki. Thank you for having me on.
It was a total pleasure.
Same here.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right. And now let's hear from Terry.
Hello, everyone. So I picked vulnerability and authenticity, and what attracted me to this commitment was I know in the past I often shrink away from vulnerability. I get really scared, and I don't want to live there. And so what I'm learning to do is to connect to that scariness. What's underneath that? What is that protecting? And when I delve into myself, then I can find that place of, oh, I was wanting more love, or, oh, I was wanting more security, or whatever that vulnerability was about. And so what I'm finding is that when I step into vulnerability, it allows me then to show up in my full emotional range. And when I do that, then I've also noticed that when I step into my vulnerability, I allow others to step into theirs and be there, versus going into, I want to fix them or make them move to another place or don't be in a temper tantrum. Or what I came up with, I love your arcing analogy, and I felt like that's like a double arcing in a way, that I have my arc of vulnerability and the other person has theirs.
And it's really interesting that you chose this and that Michael told that story about the power of vulnerability and the way he talked about it, the attractive power of vulnerability.
Yes.
I just love that way of framing it, and I think that's what you're speaking to. It is a way of modeling a form of humanity that has been made taboo.
Yes. And then when I can step into that, the other people can see I'm there, and then my experience is in it, then they soften and they go there with me.
Thank you so much, Terry, for the vulnerability of sharing this. And let's go back into the pairs to look now in the same way that you looked at the previous one, the risking your significance. Look at the vulnerability. And what I wanted to ask you to do in your pair is to, again, look at the question of what pulls you towards vulnerability? Why would you want to choose this? What's the power that it can give you? What is the obstacle? Where might it get hard for you to be in that place? And what support can you have? Welcome back, everyone. Let's see if we can hear from a couple of people before closing for today.
I just was really connecting with the purity, like when I can really be in a pure place around my vulnerability versus being clouded by all my fears. And I had a situation yesterday in our office where after months of really kind of needing some support around correcting my French when I'm sending out emails, I just was in this really non-attached place, and in a team meeting asked for it, and I just felt like people were right there with me, and I was really not attached, but I finally got the clarity that I actually had to ask for help publicly as opposed to when I desperately needed it, proactively, I guess, in a way. And it just felt really good to come to that peace and not being attached, people actually being willing to help.
Yeah, that's very nice. It's so powerful when we get to that place, because it's in a way we become stronger in a situation when we can get to that place. Thanks. Okay, so let's move towards closing. Let's hear from one or two people what's something that stands out to you from the call today.
The thing that was just standing out to me here at the end is that, you know, we had these two commitments, risking my significance and the one about vulnerability, and I'm just seeing how related they are to each other, and that when I'm risking my significance, I'm also making myself vulnerable. And so mm-hmm. if I can do both of those things in a very conscious way, then I'm doing it with holding more a sense of power over my own experience.
Thank you.
Well, what I wanted to say was that when I connect to myself or connected with another person, what came up was that when we connect, support is there. It's not like we have to figure it out. It shows up. And I was really amazed with that. There it is. So that was my experience, my takeaway.
Thank you.
I guess for me, it was doing it anyway, even when you don't have the confidence. And I guess what that leaves me with is kind of churning, nauseating sensation in my stomach. Like all of those reasons that I've used to stop myself from doing things are now kind of useless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.